is what's known as the Farmers' Charter, and if you like, this is the kind of the rules of engagement between the Department of Agriculture and farmers. And at the moment, because this changes regularly, farmers now are informed of an inspection, usually by telephone, up to 48 hours or 2 days before the inspection. Many inspections do not require the farmer to be present. So in that case, they will say, I'm inspecting this particular parcel, for example, and the farmer need not be present at that. But in other cases, the farmer will be need to be present. For example, if animals need to be penned or whatever it might be.
It's great to be back with another Environment Edge podcast, and you're very welcome to the show. Today, we have a really interesting chat about what a farmer needs to know when they get a Department of Agriculture farm inspection.
I think it's really important to provide farmers with support throughout the conditionality process, formerly known as cross-compliance. And part of this is knowing what to expect. Department of Agriculture District Inspector in the Integrated Controls Division, Raymond O'Neill, joins us to shed some light.
I'm Carl Summers.
And I'm Deirdre Glenn.
Your Chagas Sustainability Advisors. And we're back for another Environment Edge podcast, number 76. And here we go.
Raymond, you're very welcome to the show. Farmers are living under, and I suppose working as well, under a lens. Can you tell us a little about how they get selected for inspections? Is it random or is it risk analysis?
Hi, Deirdre. So, yeah, there are about 124,000 farmers who are claiming BIS at the moment. And of those, we select for what we call a conditionality inspection 1% every single year. Now, of those 1%, we have criteria of who gets selected, obviously. So there are about 25% of farmers are chosen on a random basis. So anybody could be selected from that. But then the other 75% are chosen on what we call a risk. And a risk is something that's very specific to what we're inspecting. And, you know, the risk could be something like you're very heavily stocked, or you had a non-compliance in previous years, or, you know, there could be various risks for various schemes. So it's very much a thought out process, and it goes along a formula which we inspect. Now, I will say this, obviously, the more farmers apply for and get payment for voluntary schemes, then there will be the same type of criteria put into the risk selection. And the voluntary schemes I'm talking about could be the beef schemes, sheep schemes, young farmer schemes, could be acre schemes, for example, whatever it might be.
Excellent. So will a farmer get much notice of an inspection?
Yeah, so there is what's known as the Farmers' Charter. And if you like, this is the kind of the rules of engagement between the Department of Agriculture and farmers. And at the moment, because this changes regularly, and COVID would have led to many big changes of this, farmers now get informed of an inspection, usually by telephone, up to 48 hours or 2 days before the inspection. And what will happen there is the officer will ring up and they will introduce themselves. They will then inquire about that they're speaking to the right person. They will try to qualify this by the herd number. And what they will do then is that they will lay out what they are looking for and when they would like to attend. Many inspections do not require the farmer to be present. So in that case, they will say, I'm inspecting this particular parcel, for example, and the farmer need not be present at that. But in other cases, the farmer will be need to be present. For example, if animals need to be penned or whatever it might be.
Do you know, would you request anything from the farmers, or can you just drive in and, you know, just have a walk around?
So what we do is at the first phone call, the farmers may inquire, or the officers may actually ask that certain records are available before that the farmer actually, before the inspection takes place. And again, one of the areas that we're very keen on is that farmers maintain and complete their records as prescribed. Now, records, for example, one of the ones that often fall foul are things like medicines or animal remedy records. The pesticide application records are some things we will look for. And things like the record books for various schemes. So these will be the actions that you took or applied for and then took, that they're recorded in a satisfactory sort, in a satisfactory way.
They get a chance to action some of the, like the medicines and the prescriptions and the pesticides information after the inspection, or does it have to be there on the day?
So typically what we'll do is they will have to be there on the day for some, but others can be sent in later on and completed accordingly. So depending on what records it is. For example, the action book for a beef scheme has to be submitted within 2 days of the inspection occurring. So there can be some finishing paragraphs on that if necessary.
And once you fall under the risk category,
yes,
is there a greater chance of you having inspections going forward? Does it still fall into the 1% category, or is it a greater, a 10% chance or a 20% chance?
Deirdre, I can't give the exact percentage, but if you have a non-compliance in the past, for whatever reason, then the chances of you getting inspected again are much higher, because now you are in a risk category. And as I said to you already, 75% of all inspections, give or take, are selected on a risk basis. And one of the things that we are quite insistent on is that when non-compliance is found, that by the farmer using your services in Chagas, that is remedied and a solution is found. Now, what we don't want to do if we go back in again, that the same non-compliance exists. Obviously, if it were to occur the second time with nothing have been done, the consequences of that are a little more serious than just finding it the first time.
And once the farmer then gets notice of an inspection by telephone call, etc. Now, I do know that some of the inspections, the inspector just comes to the farm. There's no notice. But where there is notice, is there flexibility with time and dates then for the inspection?
So the vast majority of inspections stick to the 48-hour notice. There was a thing in the past before COVID where some of the inspections were no notice. People just used to arrive and start the inspection.
Okay.
That's largely gone now. So farmers will have notice. With regard to the day and the time, there is always flexibility. So if the farmer wants to be in attendance, then he or she will work with the officer to say, look, the afternoon suits me or the morning suits me. And they can work together to arrange a suitable time for both. As I said, though, in many cases, the farmer is not required for the inspection. And again, that there's obviously much more flexibility in that case.
Good to know.
A lot of our farmers, I suppose, myself and Deirdre are on farms every day, and look, yeah, same as yourselves, but a lot of our farmers would have known conditionality as cross-compliance inspections. If you're sitting on a farm now and maybe you've had an inspection before or never had one before, what does it look like when you do arrive on the ground?
So again, if you're doing a conditionality inspection, a conditionality inspection is a kind of an overarching look at the entire farming operation. And it's basically split down into two parts, okay? And these two parts are what we call the standard management requirements, and they are called the good agricultural land in good agricultural environmental condition. Now, there are 11 SMRs based around farm management, and there are
what's
nine,
an SMR?
My apologies, statutory management regulations.
Yeah.
So there are 11 of these, and these range from things like the use of pesticides to animal welfare to nitrates is obviously quite a big one. And the inspector will go through the list of what's applicable on that farm. And obviously, not every management regulation will be applicable to the farm. For example, if it's a tillage-only farm, they won't be looking for animal welfare. If it's an animal-only farm, they won't be looking for ploughing dates or pesticide records, perhaps, or whatever it might be. So it is really down to what the inspector finds on the day and when they're out there. And what the inspector is doing effectively is they're trying to verify that the farmer is complying with all of the applicable SMRs and the good agricultural and environmental conditions on the farm. So that's effectively what they're doing. So what they're doing is they are checking, because the Department of Agriculture is listed at what they call the paying agency. So our role, in effect, is to provide on-the-spot checks. And if there is an issue, to provide a system of payment reductions. Now, typically, the payment reductions are quite small. But after that, to take account of things like, is the non-compliance, is it a negligence? Is it something that just happened and may not happen again, or the farmer wasn't directly at fault for? But, or was it an intentional act that the farmer did know that something was clearly out of line, but continued anyway? And as I said to you already, if there was a reoccurrence or a repetition of breaches, we'd like to look to see have those occurred on a farm also, and to take the appropriate sanctions if that's necessary at that case.
So there's different level of penalties then associated with the different, whether there's intent or negligence?
Yeah, so absolutely. So negligence is the lowest level. And typically there, a farmer will be sanctioned maybe 3% of their BIS application. Okay. Now that varies between 1% and 10%, depending on what farmers find, or maybe there's multiple issues and they all could add up together, for example. An intentional act then is something that the farmer did know about, and if you like, it is a more serious offence in our book, and it will be sanctioned accordingly. And I said to you previously, there is such thing as reoccurrence, where we did spot something wrong in the past, and on the second time around, it was still wrong, then again, that would carry also a serious, more serious sanction if that were to be found. Now, the amount of times it's found is actually relatively rare, because people act on the first instance. So thankfully, that's not something we come across in a big way.
How much time, Raymond, would an inspector give before a second visit, I suppose? How much time would a farmer have to correct maybe an issue, or does it vary on the problem that's found?
It varies quite a bit. The farmer, if the, again, going back to what we call of the risk, the farmer will go into the risk category if they find something. And it could be a period of years or 1 year or months, depending on what they find. So there's no hard and fast rule on that. But the farmer must be aware, if there's a non-compliance, especially a serious non-compliance found on a farm, then the likelihood of a second inspection is quite high.
And if a farmer does, if you do come across an issue with them, maybe it's minor to moderate, are they on a kind of a radar then for the next number of years, or do you kind of have a hot list, or what way does it work?
I wouldn't call it a hot list now, but they certainly will go into what I call the risk category. So immediately what we will do is we will advise farmers to talk to somebody like yourselves, because whatever the non-compliance out there, there is a range of solutions in order to correct that problem. And some of these problems might be quite minor, and the financial outlay might be quite small in fixing those. But we will advise people, look, to talk to their advisor, find a solution, and to correct the non-compliance. And that's probably that's what we do advise people in all situations to do. And it's better that is done before we come back out and find the same thing wrong again.
It's important then for farmers to know that their scheme eligibility is hinged on these SMRs and GAC regulations.
Mm-hmm. So there's two types of schemes, just not to go into too much detail, but there are what we call the Pillar 1 schemes. Now, the Pillar 1 schemes currently are called BIS. They used to be called BPS. Before that, SPS, and back through time to call different things. So they also consist of things like the ECO schemes, the CRIS, and the ANC schemes. They're linked to conditionality. But a farmer can also choose what we call a voluntary scheme. There, those being beef schemes, sheep schemes at the moment, the young farmer scheme is up and running. And again, were farmers to apply for those, then obviously they have their own terms and conditions. And there's a list of requirements that we go and look for once we're out on farms. And we inspect those very much like the conditionality. So there is a risk list, and we will go and we will look at both random and risk cases, and look for the different actions that we require to have happened on farm to comply with the terms and conditions of the scheme, so we may pay them. And again, I'd like to point out the value of these schemes is extremely high. Last year, for example, Department of Agriculture, as the paying body, for the EU, would have paid about 750 million euros every single year just for the Pillar 1. So that's BIS, CRIS, etc. And about the same amount of money for Pillar 2 schemes. And there would be ANC, acres, sheep improvement scheme, suckler cow schemes, etc., etc. So the amount of money going on farms is quite high. I suppose the bottom line is our role is to verify that this money is being spent in the right way.
Look, and a lot of farmers are really reliant on that money as well, so it's vitally important. If you ever came across a farmer, say, that wasn't drawing down the money on BIS, or formerly basic payments, so yes, they weren't claiming back to their money there, and I suppose you'd often penalise their basic payments, but if they didn't have that, what happens in that situation?
So the regulations on this obviously come from legislation. So our route stems from specific national legislation. So conditionality and the rules therein are the farmers are subject to conditionality regardless if they apply for BIS or not. What the difference is the means of penalising in a non-compliance situation. So we have a number of different bodies who report to us, and each of those bodies can instigate their own proceedings against the farmer if they find breaches of the conditionality rules. So again, it mightn't be the sanctions might be different, but the rules and conditionality and good agricultural environmental condition still remain, regardless of if the farmer draws a BIS application or not.
Yeah, end up in court kind of job, I suppose. Well, we've seen some examples.
That would be the worst case situation, but yeah, that is possible that the farmer could fall foul of conditionality, and because they have no BIS application, then they could find themselves in front of a judge, and obviously nobody wants to go down that road.
So farmers are subject also, I suppose, to county council inspections or fisheries inspections, and they report to you as well. So there's a cross-reporting mechanism there?
Yeah, so we have a cross-reporting mechanism. There are actually five different agencies that cross-report into us, and those are Inland Fisheries. Obviously, they'd have an interest in one particular in water quality. Other Department of Agriculture divisions, be it the veterinary side or the whatever, report to us. National Monuments report to us. National Parks and Wildlife, they're very keen on hedgerows and hedgerow removal. And obviously local authorities are taking a very proactive stance at the moment with regards to on-farm pollution. So any of those five bodies can send in what we call cross reports, and then we can act then on that information that they find on the ground.
So the farmer gets the call from the inspector on the day, what should it do to prepare for that if they've got 48 hours notice?
So I suppose what we would like to do for the farmer outside of the inspections, but inspections included, is what we would like is for farmers to routinely evaluate your farming practices. What am I doing and how does it fit into this conditionality? We would also like for farmers to be fully aware of the requirements and actions required on each scheme that they have applied for. Unfortunately, we have a number of situations where farmers say to us, well, we didn't realize we had to do that for the beef scheme or the sheep scheme or whatever it might be. And again, that should be gone through in detail before we arrive to know, have they the correct actions in place and what are the requirements? And the last one, to repeat again, that we would like to see the records maintained and have them fully completed. And I know that records and farmers sometimes don't see eye to eye, but it is an important part of farming at the moment. So things like your medicine or animal remedy records, your pesticide records is frequently one that we find issues with. And as I said to you before, your action record books for whatever scheme you might be in need to be completed and fully available once we get on farm. And that'll take a lot of the stress of finding this, that, and the other once we're out on farm, away from farmers, that all of these are ready to go.
We love our administration on farms, all right.
I can imagine, yeah.
That's why we have good shoeboxes to keep all those records in.
Yeah.
But a quick one, I suppose, so after the inspection is done, you leave a report obviously behind you and the farmer has to follow up on it. Does the farmer kind of sign off on the report, or what way does it work? And I suppose what's in the report, as in, you know, what's your kind of top three or five issues that you come across that you'd like farmers maybe to tackle?
Okay, so before the officer leaves the farm, then the farmer will be told of a number of what we call possible non-compliances, and the farmer is can sign that form to ensure that they're, and they can get a clear explanation from the officer of what they found and maybe the non-compliances found, etc., etc. Okay, then the farmer has a period of 2 weeks to reply to that, to say, on thinking about that, I think, you know, and further information can be given. Okay, so nothing will happen for 2 weeks. The sanction will not start to kick in for 2 weeks. So there's a little period of time there for the farmer to have a think about just what happened. Okay.
So Raymond, by not signing the document on the day, it's not prejudicing the farmer.
Not at all. No, not at all.
Brilliant.
But
that's,
they're typically invited to sign it, and so everybody is aware of what happened, and the farmer is accepting, this is what happened, this is what was found. Okay. But there is a 2-week window before the sanction, and the farmer can send in information if he or she so wants to do so. And only then will what we call the formal notice be sent to the farmer, giving the full outcome of inspection and any sanction that might happen. Now, sometimes the formal notice, or in a lot of cases, is clear. And we say, yeah, we're absolutely happy that everything you're doing and the scheme that we are inspecting is as per requirements, and everybody goes about their business, and the world rolls along. And that happens in a surprisingly high amount of cases. I think farmers are always think of the worst case scenarios, and the truth is the opposite. Most of our inspections are clear. And I think that's important to note. And the second part of your question was, Cathal.
Yeah, what are the big hitters that you kind of come
oh,
across?
Oh, sorry,
the
that was it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I suppose it's a dual thing. So what are you finding on farms? And equally, our listeners that are listening now, kind of what are the top things they could be focusing on before you hit the farm even maybe?
Okay. So the big one, certainly from a conditionality point of view, is what we call SMR1 and SMR2. And those are based around nitrates. So it is how slurry is stored and managed on farms, how fertilizer is applied on farms. It's all of the management of manures, of soiled water. Now, we could easily do an hour-long podcast just based around nitrates itself, but we do find a lot of issues around nitrates. And again, it is a very wide and complex area involving all streams of agriculture. So no matter what part of farming you're doing, you will impinge on nitrates at some stage or other. So people should be make themselves aware of the conditions around nitrates and what is expected around that. And unfortunately, about a third of all non-compliances are around the nitrates area, SMR2 in this case.
Is it
regulated around having a nutrient management plan? Do farmers legally have to have a nutrient management plan on their farm?
No, farmers do not.
Plan.
They do not need a fertilizer nutrient management plan as of now. Whether that will come in or not in the future is a different case. But when we go on farm, I suppose what we look for is we will walk the yard, first of all. We will check the sheds, and then we'll go and we'll check the rest of the farm. We'll walk into all the fields and check the different things. Another issue which we find a bit is hedgerows that have been removed. Again, that is a clear non-compliance. And another one is we find a bit is improper use of pesticides for whatever reason, or the records that are associated with that also make up quite a few of the non-compliances. So they are probably the top three that we find on a conditionality inspection.
So the big ones then, maybe lack of slurry storage, maybe spreading slurry or fertilizer at the wrong times of the year, probably slurry, and then the pesticides. And yeah, so they're the big kind of hitters. I think for our listeners, we're definitely going to have to get you back if you're interested to kind of have a chat about the nitrates, just to give, I suppose, our listeners a rundown. Probably won't have time today, but if for a conditionality inspection, is there anywhere where farmers can, I suppose, get some information on what they need to look for before an inspection? Any, do you have a handy website, or should they go to their advisor?
There is a very good website, and there is also a very good book out, which is entitled Explanatory Handbook for Conditionality Requirements. And again, it's a very clear book, lots of clear graphics, lots of pictures of the right way and the wrong way to do things. And I would encourage all farmers to acquire one of these booklets and go through it and pick out the individual ones. And as I said to you before, not all SMRs apply. For example, a very small proportion of farmers are involved in special areas of conservation. And that has two SMRs, all of their very own, that therefore won't apply to you immediately. So pick out the ones that apply to you. And again, marry that then with what you're doing on farms and see, are you doing it the right way and as per the booklet outlines? But again, I would always encourage farmers to talk to their advisor and insist on their advisor coming out to do a farm visit, because you can't beat boots on the ground. And an advisor can easily come in and see a situation that can be relatively easily remedied if they're out there. But obviously, if they're not, then that can't happen. So we would encourage people to engage with their advisory service. And they do a very, very good service in that point of view. They can spot things that the farmer may not spot. And that will save the farmer an awful lot of trouble in the long run.
And Raymond, they have a right to appeal also, don't they, the decision once it's made?
They do. They've actually a few different routes to appeal. So there's two reasons, I suppose, the farmer will feel hard done by. The first one would be that they didn't feel the procedure was correct or appropriate or forgiving. And the second one is they may disagree with the decision itself. And they can submit, and this is all very clearly laid out in the letters that are given to farmers, they can submit a review or appeal. And what review appeal will do is that they will look for a complete overview of the entire inspection from the process through to the sanction, through to how the sanction was calculated. And if that is, if they're still dissatisfied, then there is a system of going to the Agricultural Appeals Office. And again, there's a whole system of what they can do there. So there's a number of different layers if they feel they've been hard done by. And it does happen from time to time, occasionally. And so there's a number of different routes the farmers can go if they feel unjustly treated or unfairly treated.
Good to know. Thanks, Raymond.
No, Raymond, I think it's clear from our chat today that, look, when you come on farm, just to work with you, try and resolve any issues that may have been identified. Don't shy away from it. Certainly don't duck your head in the sand. Work with your local advisor. Try and educate yourself on what you're looking for. And I think the last 20, 25 minutes of conversation, you certainly filled us in a lot on what we should expect and how we should prepare. And I suppose how we should deal with what you've come across and work with you. And I'd just like to say, a really enjoyable conversation. I think you fill in a lot of gaps for us and our listeners this morning, and we hope to have you again on the show. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
So there you have it. Tune in next time to hear some more interesting chats and discussion.
Myself and Deirdre will be back in 2 weeks' time, but do give us a review on Apple and Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening to the Environment Edge podcast. Chat to you soon.